Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership.
Let's come aboard.
We come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. These are challenging times. Rocket Mortgage is prepared to help. If you need mortgage assistance, contact their team 24/7 at rocketmortgage.com. From their home to yours, the team at Rocket Mortgage is with you. Thanks for being with us, everybody. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. Tell your smart speaker to play CBS Sports Radio every single morning and wake up and get your day started with us. 6 until 10 a.m. Eastern Time right here on CBS Sports Radio. Coming up this hour, we are stunned to a news in about 20 minutes. And in 40 minutes, we have a champ and a chump. However, we here on the DA show have figured there is a void to fill for all of us in the sports world. We are doing our best, morning by morning, daily, to bring you sports opinions, thoughts, takes, laughs when it comes to the world of sports. But without games being played, we needed to scratch the itch elsewhere. So we decided here on the DA show to take the greatest sports movies of all time and break them down as though they were the games. And so we began with Blue Chips, a movie about college basketball's underbelly, the illegal recruiting. We then, last week, took on He Got Game, another film about college basketball and the recruiting of Jesus Shuttlesworth, a.k.a. Ray Allen, in a Spike Lee joint, also starring Denzel Washington. But this week we decided it's time for baseball. And what better baseball film to begin with than a 1993 vehicle starring a young boy who has dreams of playing Major League Baseball one day. But he's not very good. In fact, in Little League, he's really bad. In Little League, is so inept, he can't see the baseball as it falls in front of him in the outfield, decides to throw it over the fence in trying to field a double in right field. As his friends would say, I don't even know if that play is legal. So he ends up in the schoolyard trying to catch a pop fly to impress some girls thrown by one of the bullies of the schoolyard. And he ends up slipping on a baseball that's laying on the field, landing on his arm. His arm is broken. And after rehab, after the arm is in the cast for a couple of months, the cast is taken off. And suddenly, his arm has healed with the tendons tightened so that now he can throw upwards of 100 miles an hour. He is in the outfield of Wrigley Field in the bleachers with his friends one day. A home run comes out there. It ends up in his hands after his two friends decide, I don't want to throw it onto the field, throw it back because I'm on TV. I might embarrass myself. Young Henry Roengartner says, I'll throw it, and throws an absolute dart to home plate from center field. It's at that point in time where Cubs management identifies Henry Roengartner as their next phenom. They quickly sign Henry to a deal, push him into the team, and he makes his appearance what appears to be days later, perhaps a day later. It is the Mothership at the Movies. Let's get your popcorn ready.
Roll tape.
Because there's no flying in baseball. There's no flying in baseball. No flying.
So what I do is I start tackling the quarterback unless he get the ball to somebody else, in which case I try to tackle that person.
Say hey. Willie Mays Hayes here. Play like Mays, and I run like Hayes. How you doing?
The greatest sports movies with the greatest sports minds. Kinda.
Either we heal now as a team, or we will die as individuals.
Get your popcorn ready.
Get your popcorn ready with the DA Show.
I have so many thoughts about Rookie of the Year, 1993, starring a young man by the name of Thomas Ian Nicholas as Henry Rohngardner, and star pitcher Chet Rocket Steadman, who is played by Gary Busey, that we have two segments dedicated today to Rookie of the Year. This one and then another one next hour. Mraz, let's really deep dive into this. Let's start here with the opening scenes of him in Little League, okay? With this in Little League, he's obviously not very good. He does not start the game. He's playing as a backup. But his manager calls the kid that he comes in for in the outfield, Windermere, a moron and an imbecile. You cannot get away with that in Little League. The Little League manager is calling one of his players a moron and an imbecile. I believe this was uncalled for managerial aggression from the Little League coach of what at that point was, I guess, the Chicago Pirates.
Yes, and also it's your job as a Little League manager to coach the kids up, get them to be a little better. It wasn't Windermere's fault. How about teach them a little fundamentals? And I would also say you're a bad Little League manager for allowing kids to show up and play a game in jeans as well.
Could correct.
Not swing the baseball pants.
Yeah, and this was my first problem with Henry Rohngardner. He does get in. He wants to do well. He does want to play well. He finally gets in for Windermere in this Little League game, and he's wearing jeans. I mean, come on, Henry. You want to make plays. You want to be a big leaguer. You cannot be wearing jeans. The baseball falls over him in the outfield. He's trying to make a defensive play. He falls down. He can't find it. He can't find it under the rim of his cap. He finally does find it, spins around 10 times, throws it over the fence. You know what? I got to say, you want to play professionally? Mraz, wear something other than jeans there. That might be the first problem.
Right. Look good, play good. That's what I say. And Henry had some real problems there. I can't expect him to not be a defensive liability when he's wearing a pair of Levi's out there.
Now, Bogish, you have some young kids, and I'm sure they've played a Little League or do play a Little League. How do you feel about Henry's manager calling Windermere a moron and an imbecile?
Yeah. Now, Windermere did seem a little frail, and I think he said don't hurt yourself as well when he came into the dugout.
Yeah.
But yeah, you need to be a little nicer to these kids. Even at 10 or 11 or 12, when you're playing real games and there's tournaments at the end of the year and it's a little more serious than T-ball, you probably want to be a little nicer. We might have packed up our bag and left if one of my kids was called a moron or an imbecile.
Henry goes home after this game. His mom doesn't even want to know what happened. Knows that he's a disaster, okay? He is ready for dinner. She's making dinner, and her boyfriend comes in, this guy Jack. This is a non-baseball take, although Jack does become his player manager slash agent later. But Jack is moving too fast there. For a three-week anniversary, he's giving mom a necklace, a three-week anniversary. That's the first sign, Mraz, that you can't trust Jack as Henry's upcoming manager.
No, and what constitutes 3 weeks at that point as well? But to go by that, no way. That would creep me out. And Henry, that's where he has a little instincts. He knows that Jack's moving too fast.
Right.
So you start to see a little trust, and maybe Henry can make some right decisions going forward in life.
Yeah, good baseball instincts there. He knows Jack is moving too fast for his mom. Probably understands that if Jack becomes his player agent, he's probably in a bad hands. But he allows that to happen, which I've got a problem with. However, he is only 13 years old. So let's move forward, okay? He's in the schoolyard, slips on this baseball as he's trying to dive to catch this ball. The schoolyard bully throws up the ball. Henry Rohngardner's running full on, kind of like Willie Mays, back to the ball. He's trying to dive for the ball. He dives forward, slips on the baseball, somehow lands on his back, on his arm, to bust up his arm. I don't know what happened, but this was my first concern, that he is injury prone, a Marcus Mariota type, a Greg Oden type. If you can dive falling forward and land on your back, I've got an issue with how your durability is going to be moving forward, Mraz.
Very frail. He could not play football because if he was a quarterback like that and took a hit, who knows where his body would be bent. You're absolutely right. He defied the laws of gravity there, kind of like the second spitter in the episode of Seinfeld.
So we move into him having the busted up arm. They take off the cast. Suddenly, his arm has healed to where he can throw 300 miles or 100 miles an hour. And he ends up at this baseball game, at the Cubs game.
Now, and it's important to note it's August, DA.
It is August at this point in time, so it's still late in the season. I have a bit of a technical problem, Bogish, with John Candy not wearing headphones on the broadcast. I don't know if he could hear his producer talking to him. You know, obviously he's,
that,
got...
he's got... give the man a booth. He's John Candy. Give him his own space. He's sitting next to the, you know, Peter Schwartz, the stringer in Chicago.
That's right.
Field. Give him his own space. It isn't the headphones, but give him a radio booth.
And it seemed like, we don't know how long John Candy was the voice of the Cubs at that point in time, but it seemed like he was a long-running broadcaster because he kind of cites how long it's been since they had a winning season. He's got no press box. He's got a doofus as a producer. He's got no headphones, and he's talking into a microphone from 1925.
And no color guy.
And no color guy. They did not do John Candy any favors on this broadcast. If you're a play-by-play guy, Bogues, I think they really shorthanded Candy on the broadcast.
I was insulted. I was insulted during Blue Chips with another shot at, you know, at media members. Everybody is disgruntled and angry and whatever. And now in here we've got John Candy and that great voice around Cubs baseball, and they can't even think to give the guy his own space. And by the way, that goofy producer at times has like three headphones around his neck.
Right.
Give one to John Candy so he can hear what's going on.
You're right. So we have a shot of the owner's box, and we realize the Cubs are right now in financial distress, that they're going to transfer ownership. But the only way the new owners can finance this is if they get sellouts for the final 2 months of the season. Now, I got to tell you, Mraz, this is a terrible television deal they've signed. If the only way the money they have to buy the Cubs comes from 2 months of selling out Wrigley, what kind of finances? How are they not back-checked by Major League Baseball here?
This was the fifth of 24 notes I wrote down, so I'm so glad you brought this up. Not only is their TV contract a mess, but how is it that they don't have the meeting with whatever financial advisor until the day before they have to sell out every game the rest of the year? Like, they didn't foreshadow this in April, May, saying, hey, you need a certain number of sellouts to get there. You find this out on the exact day that the next day you need to start selling out every game? I mean, what kind of financial advisor is this running the Cubs?
And how did Major League Baseball, I'm guessing led somewhat by Bud Selig around this time, not vet the new owners? They need enough money to buy the Cubs without having to sell out the final 2 months of the season. Also, the final 2 months of the season is, let's say it's 50 games. That's 25 sellouts. They are 25 Wrigley Field sellouts away from being solvent? This is a problem.
It's a mess. It really speaks to baseball's problems pre-strike in 94.
Yes.
Now you've seen what the Cubs had to go through in 93. It's a disaster. And frankly, I mean, at the top, an owner that doesn't even know how much he's charging for hot dogs at the stadium. It's a mess.
Well, that's a whole other thing. And it's true. The owner is in the stands ultimately to watch Henry Rowan Gardner with Henry's friends and his mom. He orders 4 hot dogs. Doesn't know how much the hot dogs cost. Now, I had 2 problems with this. Number one, you're the owner. You should probably have the price of the menu at Wrigley.
Right.
Number two, if you're the owner, do you even get charged for the hot dog? Shouldn't the hot dog vendor know who the owner is and just give him to him on the house?
That's another issue here. Nobody in this Cubs organization or fans knows who anybody is.
Yeah.
I mean, Henry himself didn't know that Martinello was the manager when he knocks on his freaking door.
Yeah.
Henry, you're supposed to be a big company that excited to get tickets. You don't even know what the manager looks like. You're a disgrace.
And so, guys, if this organization was so bad that it was about to be taken away by Major League Baseball, when the owner goes into the stands, he's getting stabbed. Not
true.
People sitting politely around him, letting him eat his overpriced hot dog.
And what would he think of hot dog prices today if $3 was too much?
Exactly. These are $3 hot dogs. I turned to the Bourbon Bell. I said, this is a great deal for a hot dog in 1993. So let's get to the manager, Martinella, here. Okay, Martinella's hit tough times. The Cubs are bad again. He's probably going to get fired by the end of the season. They see Henry Roengartner throw this seed from center field bleachers, and they're like, we got to get this kid. Martinella shows up to his house, knocks on the door. How does Martinella not have something else to do here? You got to send your scout team. You got to send your GM, somebody in personnel. Mraz, Martinella wasting time going to a 13-year-old kid's house in the middle of the season. He's in a pennant stretch here. He cannot be allocating time to go track down this kid. He's got to be at the facility watching film.
Well, see, I don't mind that if ownership says, look, it makes good if you're the manager. My bigger issue is the lack of prep work. He knocks on the door and seems surprised that Henry's a kid.
Right.
Again,
right.
The bit here is right. A kid is throwing a seed from center field to home plate. I mean, has anybody in this Cubs organization let their manager know, yeah, that was a kid, we're signing a kid? How do you send them blind to the house for a blind knock on the door?
You've got to let Martinella know. You're scouting a 13-year-old. You have to let him know this.
He's
there
looking
is no
for his dad?
It's a disgrace.
But who's running this Cubs team? You don't think your manager knows you're signing a kid?
It's a disgraceful organization.
The scene before that is the goofy assistant of, like, the seedy, the nephew trying to take the team from the old guy. He comes running back in and goes, it's a kid, we'll never find him. And then they find him minutes later, but they don't tell Martinell that he's a kid.
The top to bottom, when the fish stinks, it stinks from the top down.
It really is. It's a disgraceful Cubs organization in 1993. We're finding that out pretty quickly. Henry Roengartner ends up getting signed. They put him in the opening press conference. And the media is screaming over one another, shouting for questions, shouting down each other. They can't hear them. You know, Bogues, to me, this is a really terrible media situation for the PR department. Hey, PR guys, make sure everybody's sitting down. Nobody's screaming. It's supposed to be a celebratory press conference. Instead, it's like, you know, everybody's out for blood here for a 13-year-old kid. The Chicago media, the Cubs media, brutal in 93.
Right, like he's trying to pull the wool over their eyes. The gotcha, the guy takes out a ball and goes, throw this, prove it. Like on the spot, as if the kid's lying to him. It was ugly, and you're right. If you're in charge of PR for the Cubs, you got to do a better job of controlling your room because that was out of control. It was embarrassing, and that could have kept him off. What if he just walks out overwhelmed by that, and you never have this guy on the mound for you?
13 years old, he's fielding a billion questions from angry media. I mean, this is a bad scene. They did not do any favors for Henry Roengartner. Now, it takes us to him getting introduced to the locker room, Mraz. He gets basically pushed into the locker room. Nobody introduces him to any of his teammates.
Right.
There's no rookie symposium. There's no coaching him up. There's no introduction to the team. He doesn't even know who's on the roster. He's never met anybody on the roster. Mraz, you got a 13-year-old kid here. You know, first-round draft pick, seventh-round draft picks in the NFL. They've got OTAs. They get to meet everybody. You know, they do nothing for Henry Roengartner. There is no support system in there for a 13-year-old.
Nothing at all. There should have been some. By the way, can a car pick him up to bring him to the game? They don't even give him a spot.
He's got
to
walk there with his friends.
They're parked underneath the L train. They don't even get a player slot situation. and the clubhouse attendant knows there's a kid coming. At first, doesn't put two and two together that might be the kid.
Right.
And also, again, we're talking about the franchise being taken. They let Henry know you got to bring your own glove, your own bat, your own
terrible.
Ball. I mean, can you let Henry know we have equipment here for you?
It's terrible. Henry has to walk to the ballpark with his two friends, with his own bat and his own glove in jeans and sneakers. I mean, come on, Cubs organization. Get this kid some proper tutelage. You don't just draft a phenom and then let him get eaten by the Wolves here. Also, I got to tell you, locker room culture for the Cubs is terrible. They all look at this kid
terrible.
As he enters the locker room, and they're looking at him side-eyed, angry, they're grunting. This is a 13-year-old kid. You should be coming up to him, hey, how you doing? We heard about your arm. We saw the press conference. If you need anything. Whereas to me, terrible leadership inside the Cubs locker room.
And it starts with Martinella as the manager again. You got to tell those guys, hey, be nice to this kid. This isn't an ideal situation. It's been a tough year. I mean, come on. You got to bring him in with open arms. I totally agree. That team had no captainship. There was nobody on the team that was a leader. Nobody at all. And we'll get to that later on where the leadership really reared its ugly head.
Absolutely. There is no leadership whatsoever in the locker room or at the manager position.
And where's the HR department? I mean, the kid doesn't need a sex ed class on top of being, you know, initiated into the baseball
world.
That's
exactly
right. He's walking
right
around now with naked grown men.
That's right.
At eye level.
Yes.
Give the kid his own little room. Keep him safe. And let him grow up on his own, at his own pace.
That's exactly right. This is the final topic we'll tackle here this hour. We'll get into more of the baseball next hour. But they sign Rowan Gardner. He's ready to go in uniform that day, the next day, who knows when this is.
Well, I'll tell you, before you continue, this is one thing I wanted to bring up that I wrote down. That game where Henry shows up, Chet Stetman is again starting. Chet Stetman started the game that Henry threw the seed. So either we have now gone a full 4 days and given the benefit of the doubt on rotation, or Chet Stetman needs to pitch every other day.
That's a great point. It's a great point. Stetman is Gary Busey here.
And if Stetman is not pitching the very next day, that means you've already now not sold out and therefore would be losing the franchise.
It's such a good point. So they have Rowan Gardner ready to go. Okay, he's in uniform. You say, okay, this is just a day where he experiences what it's like to be in a big league clubhouse, in the dugout, what have you. Stetman throws 8 2/3, I think. And then they put Henry Rowan Gardner in the game with two outs in the ninth. They've never seen him play baseball, guys. They've only seen him throw one pitch from center field. He has never been in the minors. He's never thrown a bullpen session. There's not an inning of work on the docket for this kid. We don't even know if he pitched in Little League. He throws one seed from center field, and they're putting him in with two outs in the ninth. They don't even know if he can throw a pitch. Guys, the Cubs organization, the scouting of Henry Rowan Gardner has been a disaster, and his usage to put him in the first game in a save situation for Stetman, to me, is a nightmare.
It's totally a nightmare, and ownership calling down to make that call as if Stedman's the biggest bum in the world. Well, how big a bum is he if he just gave you 8 2/3 and you win in the ballgame?
That's right. I believe the Cubs, by my math, had a 5-3 lead, two outs in the ninth.
By my math.
Stedman's got you there. You got to ride Stedman.
Keep his score.
You got to ride Stedman. You know, Rowan Gardner nearly blows the game because you've never seen him throw a baseball before in a competitive situation.
And how do you not get him out of the game when the first pitch is a home run, the second pitch is hit by batter? At that point, Martinelli's going to get out there and go, it's not the day for you, kid.
Exactly.
How do you let him work his way out of it?
We've never seen you.
Now it's not the time to work your way out of it.
We've never seen you throw a baseball before. You've never seen an inning of what you pitch. We're taking you out right now. You're coming up a
Who's
home run in a wild
team, Brady Little?
Terrible. Terrible Cubs decision making. The whole thing is terrible. All right, we'll continue breaking down Rookie of the Year, the 1993 film coming up next hour. There's just so much to break down. We had to do it in two different parts. When we come back, we are stunned to a news. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Good value, big upside.
DA, if you and I could sit and watch the 1978 World Series.
Yes!
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
The question is, would we want to? Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Whether you own or rent, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home is hard work, so get a quote. Geico.com. That's easy. We are heard on hundreds of affiliates nationwide and north of the border. Also, you can listen to us in Sirius Satellite, Sirius XM Channel 206, and you can stream us as well. Use the radio.com app, Apple Music. You can also use your smart speaker to play CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports the app, or you can watch us at watchda.com. Coming up this hour on the show in about 12 minutes from now, we'll bring you a champ and we'll bring you a chump. Also coming up next hour, did the Falcons celebrate too early in their Super Bowl a couple of years ago in their collapse against the Patriots? Scott Pioli was in their front office at the time. He had a fascinating story here on CBS Sports Radio about how things were going inside the press box, inside the luxury suites. So we'll hear that coming up for you in about 35 minutes from now. Also, our poll question is up. We are breaking down the movie Rookie of the Year as Mothership at the Movies continues. Get your popcorn ready. And we are asking, is the ninth inning Cubs and Mets, the penultimate scene or the ultimate scene in this movie, is that the worst inning in Mets history? So you can vote on that. Go to the web poll at CBS Sports Radio on Twitter, at CBS Sports Radio. Also on the Facebook page, facebook.com/TheDAShow. Now, spoiler alert, Mets in a game 163 to win the National League East, and in this case, go directly to the World Series. Apparently, at that point in time, no LCSs in 1993 for that one random year for Major League Baseball. Game 163 to go to the World Series. Mets get two different runners on. Both get picked off on trick plays, and the Cubs end up winning and going to the World Series. Is getting beaten by a Henry Rhone Gardner who had lost his stuff the worst moment in Mets history? Vote on that in our web poll. That is, again, at The DA Show on Facebook or at CBS Sports Radio on Twitter. Lots more thoughts on Rookie of the Year coming up in hour number four. But first, Andrew Bogish has our headlines this morning. Good morning, Bogues.
DA, good morning again. These headlines are sponsored by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home is hard work, so get a quote at geico.com. Easy. Once the Bengals pick Joe Burrow in 2 weeks, Washington on the clock with pick
number two.
Ohio State pass rusher Chase Young has to be the pick, but new head coach Ron Rivera will play it cool for now.
I like to believe in the back of my mind, I know what we want to do. But, you know, you've got to go through the process. You've got to go through what we're going to go through for the next 5 days with our readings, with our coaches, and then what we're going to do the next 5 days after that with Kyle and I going through the board, resetting the board, looking at it, going through our own mock draft.
Rivera added that you need an impact player at number two, whether you draft him there or trade the pick for someone already making an impact in the league. Oklahoma State issued a statement last night to walk back the comments of football coach Mike Gundy. He wants to restart his operation on May 1st, mainly because the state and school need football money. Gundy's plan for keeping everyone healthy and safe wasn't really grounded in science and or facts. The school says it'll listen to doctors, the government, and the Big 12 when deciding to reopen. Arizona freshman point guard Nico Mannion, Maryland forward Jalen Smith, and Duke freshman guard Cassius Stanley declaring for the NBA draft. Mannion's a top 15 prospect after averaging 14 points and 5 assists for the Wildcats. More hardware yesterday for Dayton forward Obi Toppin. He is now the Wooden Award winner on top of the Naismith Award and AP Player of the Year. And the much maligned UFC 249 reportedly being held at the Tachi Palace Casino. That's 40 miles south of Fresno, California. The casino
beautiful
is
place.
On
just a gorgeous, gorgeous getaway.
It sounds lovely. The casino on tribal land, which means California's stay-at-home order doesn't technically apply there. The main event is now Tony Ferguson against Justin Gaethje, who's replacing Khabib Nurmagomedov.
Fresno in itself is an interesting place. I mean, it's kind of the middle of nowhere in California. You drive through that, there's a lot of farm stands, not a lot going on, a lot of fields. I could only imagine 40 miles south of Fresno, there can't be a lot going on. Not exactly the California that most people envision.
And then there is still that private island very much in play for the UFC. Dana White would use that for international fighters that can't travel right now to the U.S. And now, guys, sit back and be stunned.
Yes.
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA Show is stunned to a news.
From Fresno, California, or 40 miles south of it, to Alton, Illinois.
Okay.
Alton, Illinois, a population around 26,000 people. It is in the southwest corner of Illinois, only about 15 miles north of St. Louis, Missouri.
Okay.
Now, the mayor of Alton, Illinois is Brant Walker. and he's been fighting the good fight against coronavirus, strongly backing the state's stay-at-home order.
Sure.
When he was told recently that people were still doing things together outside, Walker gave local police the power to use citations and even arrests when necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Then over the weekend, police were told of people hanging out at Hiram's Tavern, the famous one in downtown Alton, Illinois.
Of course, the famous Hiram's Tavern in Alton, Illinois.
Right. If you're going to go to Alton, Illinois, you got to go to Hiram's. There's no two ways about it.
That's right. It's a
must-see.
So
guess who they guess who they found among the folks having drinks in Sweet Hiram's?
Who did they find?
Mrs. Brant Walker.
Oh,
first
really?
First lady of Alton was out and
really?
About directly ignoring her husband and the state of Illinois.
Okay, so a couple of things here. Number one, how do you think that marriage was going at that point in time? Do you think that she is purposefully going against his orders because she thinks that he is some type of power-hungry idiot? Or is she just like a total drunkard and she's just at the bar every single night and he can't help that?
Oh, well, I think...
What did she say? What was the story, you think, to get out of the house at 1 a.m. Sunday morning? Where did she say she was?
My guess is the mayor of Alton, he's probably not been home much having to deal with this. So she's a little bored and decides, you know what, screw this. I'm going to go up to the bar, and what are they going to do to me? I'm the wife of the mayor. So she probably thought she was more Teflon using her husband's power and didn't think there was anything wrong with it.
I'm telling you, I'm looking at a picture of Brant Walker right now, and I could see why she wants out and go to the bar. This guy.
But you love the Bucks creamsicle, you.
Well, I mean, just look at this guy's haircut. It looks like he's got a dead porcupine or possum on top of his head. I mean, this thing, I don't know what type of haircut that is, but it looks like a pseudo mullet slash like a professor type
like
of Doc Brown look. He looks a little bit like a scared Mike Gundy, like a scared old gray Mike Gundy. And with the black rim glasses and the bright red polo, I mean, yeah, of course his wife is like, I'm getting out of here. I can't deal with Brant anymore. He's on this power trip. He's telling everybody to stay home. I got to get out of here. My question is, do you serve the mayor's wife? Because she's not supposed to be there, but you are tending bar. My guess is the bar's not supposed to be open either.
Yeah, but don't you feel safe if the mayor's wife is coming to your bar? That tells me I can be in business. Because
fair.
If the mayor's wife is here, of course I'm okay. Everybody in that place probably felt so safe that the mayor's wife was there drinking with them because it gives them that sense of, well, it's okay for her and it's okay for me.
You know, it is a true jam up for all those people in there because they do, you're right, probably feel safe about this. But I got to say, you know, are these bars open or closed? Because that's the other thing. Is the bar illegally open? Because if it's legally open, then the mayor's not doing his job there.
Well, my guess is you have a lot of these places right now countrywide that are doing takeout orders and places are allowing you to serve your alcohol to go. I just ordered a couple beers on Saturday with food.
Okay.
So some of these places, probably like the underground casinos, are doing wink-wink to a lot of their loyal customers saying, look, while we're pumping out all these to-go orders, come in, we'll serve you, sit at the bar, hang out like you normally would. It's not that big a deal, but we're just not going to fill the restaurant part of this because we got to-go orders coming out.
Interesting. That's a good point. I also think that Brant Walker's wife fears not about coronavirus at Hiram's Tavern. I mean, she's belly up at the bar. She's taking her shots or having her beers. Bartender's within a couple of feet of her. I mean, let's face it, no social distancing for her. She's not worried about coronavirus in Alton, Illinois.
No, she probably thinks Alton, Illinois, sadly, is immune to this. It's a terrible job. She's not a good mayor's wife. She's not a good Mrs. Walker.
And
the kicker to all of this... Go ahead, D.A.
If the mayor is going on TV and saying you got to stay home and his wife's going out there, if he's going home being like, yeah, I told the crowds they got to stay home, but, you know, you can go to the bar if you want, or I'm going to go out to the bar as well. I'm going to go out to the restaurant and we're going to eat in the back door. I mean, that's a bad job by the mayor, too, just saying what he's supposed to say, but not actually living what he's supposed to be doing.
If this is an election year in Alton, Illinois, Brant Walker just lost off this story.
Bad job by Governor Mayor Walker there.
But guys, here's the kicker. Here's the kicker. He sold his wife down the river. When they called him and said, we've got her, she was drinking at Hiram's, he said, treat her like anybody else.
Is
no
that
special
right?
treatment.
Good.
And the quote is, his statement from his office was, my wife is an adult. capable of making her own decisions, and this and in this instance, she exhibited a stunning lack of judgment.
Wow.
She now faces the same consequences for her ill-advised decision as the other individuals who chose to violate the stay-at-home order. So he hates her, she hates him, probably hence why she was at Hiram's on a Sunday night.
He might not have control over his household, but that's a strong statement. I appreciate that from Mayor Walker.
Strong statement, but if they have a shared bank account when it comes to paying that fine she's going to be levied with, it's coming out of his pocket.
Fair, but I mean, that's the right tack to take and not try to get your wife out of it because she's a family. Because she's family, you know, this happens all the time with the people in power trying to get their family or their friends off the hook easily. He's not saying that. So my guess is she's just a drunken floozy that's going around town all the time and that he can't control her.
Better person to hang out with, Mrs. Walker or Hurricane Jen?
Oof. Probably Hurricane Jen because she owns roosters. And she sends nudes to Rex Ryan's burner accounts.
Right.
But who knows? You know, could that be happening for the manager of the Cardinals from, you know, Mayor Walker's wife?
Well, Mike Schilt. Yeah, Mike Schilt's the one throwing together weddings in 2 months and down to Florida. So they get married in spring training. So maybe he had to because he's getting nudes from the mayor's wife.
Okay. Thanks, Bogues. When we come back, we've got a champ and we've got a chump. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Only one letter separates them, but they're galaxies apart. One is a true winner. One is a pathetic loser. This is DA's champ or chump.
Your champs and your chums. Sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts. For all of your car care needs, get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly. Better parts, better prices every day. My champ is Justin Verlander, who announced that while MLB still sends him his paychecks, even though the season is suspended, he has decided to donate those funds, every paycheck, to a different organization each week to support the efforts and the work that people are doing during this COVID-19 crisis. He wrote on Instagram, "Everyone around the world is affected by this virus. We hope to contribute to the families and jobs affected, the healthcare workers, first responders on the front lines, and the many others in need of basic necessities, medical supplies, and support at home. As soon as the first paycheck is received, we will be highlighting the first organization. We know everyone is impacted by the crisis, but for those who are able, we encourage you to stay home to help flatten the curve and look at those around you who help and need a helping hand." So nice job by Justin Verlander. By my calculations, at $28 million a year, if he gets a paycheck every 2 weeks, that's $107,000 every 2 weeks. So if that's spread out over the course of a full calendar year and not just consolidated in between the baseball season, that's a lot of cash, even if it's spread out amongst the 26 different paychecks in a biweekly pay period. $107,000 each time you get a paycheck, sending that out to the front lines for some other organization, for people that need help, is a pretty cool thing. So I know that the Houston Astros are the enemies. I know that they're the villains after the cheating scandal. And, of course, that returns once baseball returns and sports returns. But for now, it's not about those types of things, not about that type of animosity. It's about saluting others that are helping and helping out yourself. So Justin Verlander giving his paycheck every single week or every 2 weeks is another organization. He is the champ today.
That's DA's champ.
Your chumps is the Lakers ownership group, because this is an organization estimated at worth $4.4 billion. $4.4 billion. And they are asking all of their employees to take a 20% pay cut. Now, one report says it's actually just a deferment, which, okay, if you're just deferring the payments, you're still getting those in the back end. That's one thing. But I got to say, I don't know, of course, how the business layers are working right now, how the levers are being pulled within these organizations. But it just strikes me that if you are worth $4.4 billion and you have an organization that's a pretty set amount of employees. You've got your roster. You've got your front office. Of course, you've got your arena folks as well. But I don't think that they're probably employed by the team. They're employed by Staples Center or some type of managerial team, management team that staffs that. The Lakers, they don't have a lot of costs right now. I know they're not making the money on attendance. They're not making money on gates, but they're worth $4 billion, okay? And their costs right now are next to nothing. So, yeah, the league's gone dark. And yes, I'm sure these teams are hurting from where they normally sit. But I just think that you've only been out for a month now. I mean, you've only not been playing basketball for less than a month. You're already asking as a $4 billion company with a set amount of employees to take 20% pay cuts across the board. I mean, to me, they're going to tout how much they're worth when it works for them. And then the moment they want to save some cash, go, hey, we need everybody to give here. To me, not cool. Lakers, chumps.
That's DA's chump. Class is now dismissed.
I just hope that they are taking care of those arena workers and those day wagers and those people that are actually not being able to get paid right now because there are no games. The ticket takers and the concessionaires and the parking lot people and all those people that have to work those shifts and get paid by the shift, they don't have those shifts to get. That's where they really need to help out the people that help them out. 855-212-4CBS on Twitter, DA on CBS. Because Mraz insists that nobody likes the old orange uniforms of the Buccaneers, Alan tweets, and what the hell does Mraz know about jerseys anyway? Paul tweets, you nailed it. Swing and a miss by the Bucs not bringing back the creamsicles. Oh. My all-time favorite. Alan tweets, these are really, really, really cool. It goes on and on and on and on and on. Everybody loves those creamsicles. You are in the minority here.
No, they love, this is so typical. They love the nostalgia of the creamsicles. If they had to look at them for
every...
Wait
a second. Do you like the Tennessee Volunteers uniforms? Do you think those are gross?
I do. I think they're very gross.
Well, they've worked for 100 years, so do you think everybody that likes those uniforms are into it because of nostalgia?
No, I also think college football is a little different where you got 1,000 teams compared to 32 teams, and being a little different, I think, is apples and oranges compared to the NFL. I also think, yeah, people will like the nostalgia of the creamsicle uniforms, but they will not like the Bucs wearing those every week for the next 2-3 years. They wouldn't like it. They'd go nuts. They go, this is ugly. Stop it. And you just change the uniforms again.
Do you like the old Patriot throwbacks by the Patriots?
I prefer the ones they have now, but I like them for nostalgia purposes.
See, I mean, there's another one. That those are gorgeous uniforms. Those throwbacks are gorgeous.
Yeah, they're not. I agree, they're gorgeous. They're not hideous. That's the problem. The creamsicles are not.
But you're saying
gorgeous.
They're gorgeous
they're
and
hideous.
You don't like them. You're saying they're gorgeous and you'd prefer
no.
The new ones.
I do prefer the new ones. I think the new ones are nicer. There's a difference, though. They're still
gorgeous. So you think
gorgeous.
The new ones are more gorgeous?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Oh, I think the Patriots are one of the best uniforms of football. We're just sick of it because they're always winning in them.
No, no, no.
Oh, yes, no. Yes.
The Patriots are serviceable. They're fine uniforms. They're not one of the best in football.
I think if the Patriots weren't shoved down our throat winning every year, we wouldn't have a negative stigma or stench around the Patriots, and we would appreciate
it. It has nothing to do with their uniforms because
I think that they were getting tired of them.
No, their throwbacks are gorgeous. And if they wore those throwbacks throughout this entire thing, I'd have no problem with the uniforms. Look, the best uniforms in the NFL, the Raiders, the 49ers,
the Bears.
These are the classics. I think the Colts are gorgeous.
But none of those are hideous. The creamsicles are hideous.
No, but you're also calling the current Patriots one of the best in football. We rattled off five that are better than the Steelers are gorgeous.
All right, perfect example. Do you think when the Seahawks dress like lightning bugs, that's gorgeous? Or do you think
No.
That's unique to Seattle?
No, I don't think they're gorgeous. I think they're loud and they're obnoxious.
Well, that's exactly what the creamsicles are. They're loud and obnoxious.
I don't think they're loud and obnoxious.
But if the Seahawks
dressed
like lightning bugs in 1976, you right now would be saying, why can't we bring back the lightning bug uniforms?
No, because I think that the Buccaneers uniforms, when they were orange and white, are a lot more subdued than lightning bugs.
No, they're not. Because, they're loud.
Well, I don't consider the Tennessee Volunteers uniforms loud. They're the same orange. I mean, everybody, but you keep forgetting that the Volunteers have worn those jerseys for 100 years.
DA, again, you're allowed to be a little loud and different for 100 years.
Well, nobody
when there's
says
1,000 college teams, then you have to be different.
Nobody says the Volunteers are obnoxious uniforms.
In the NFL, yes, the books.
Why is there a different standard?
I think there isn't, because what I'm saying, there's only 32 teams where you can choose from uniforms, not a million.
Nah.
Yeah.
The Rams are absolutely one of the best uniforms in football. Absolutely.
Ah, overrated. The Rams uniforms have always been overrated.
Wrong. All of this is so wrong. When we come back here on the show, an incredible story from the Falcons and Patriots Super Bowl a couple of years ago of the Falcons celebrating before it was over. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.